The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana, the news presented by Mercy Sowa.
And Eugenia Asumedusechi.
In the headlines, Judicial Council suspends 22 judges implicated in corruption scandal in undercover investigations by ACE journalist Anas Arimeyao Anas. Filing of nominations for presidential and parliamentary primaries in NDC ends today. President Mahama says refugee crisis in Europe is a wake-up call for world leaders to address challenges. A Nigerian army releases 128 Boko Haram suspects. The Judicial Service has interdicted 22 judges implicated in a bribery scandal that hit the judiciary following an expose by ACE investigative journalist Anas Arimeyao Anas. More than 100 staff of the Judicial Service, including judges and magistrates, are being investigated. This is contained in a statement after a crunch meeting by the Judicial Council, chaired by the Chief Justice, Mrs. Georgina Wood. We bring you details of the statement.
The statement said the prevalence of corruption has always been brought to the attention of the Judicial Council. The Council has therefore resolved to fight and uproot this canker through the institution of anti-corruption policies like publishing and sensitizing lawyers, judges, and litigants on the dangers of bribery and corruption in the administration of justice. The statement said through these efforts, some judges and magistrates have been dismissed. According to the release, the attention of the Chief Justice was drawn to the expose on the 31st of last month through two petitions from Tiger Epi. One of the petitions was in respect of 12 High Court judges, while the other was on 22 Circuit Court judges and magistrates. The statement said the petition on the Superior Court judges was addressed to President Mahama through the Chief Justice requesting him to initiate impeachment proceedings against the implicated judges. President Mahama has therefore directed the Chief Justice to follow due process and bring the matter to its logical conclusion. In view of the President's directive, the Chief Justice has already started the process of determining whether there is a prima facie case against the 12 High Court judges. The statement said following an emergency Judicial Council meeting held on the 2nd of this month on the issue, the following decisions were reached. A 5-member disciplinary committee chaired by a Supreme Court judge was constituted to investigate the petition against the 22 judges and magistrates. They were served with letters stating the allegations against them and were also asked to submit their response by the 9th of this month. Effective the 10th of all 22 Circuit Court judges and magistrates will begin their suspension until the final determination of the matter, while the committee also commences the hearing of the petition against them. The statement states further that the Judicial Council has also instituted investigative processes to identify other court officials who may have collaborated in the alleged act of grave misconduct for disciplinary action. To this end, the Judicial Council has assured the general public that the outcome of these processes will be fully made public and culprits will not be spared the appropriate sanctions.
Details of a release by the Judicial Council on Anas Arimeyao Anas's expose involving some judges and magistrates. Meanwhile, information reaching Radio Ghana indicates that resignation letters tendered in by some of the implicated justices of the High Court have been turned down. Five of the justices are currently on admission at hospitals, with one suffering from a mild stroke.
Legal practitioner Chris Akume says it will be premature to label all judges as corrupt despite the investigation by undercover journalist Anas Arimeyao Anas, citing some judges and magistrates for corruption. In an interview with Agatha Samwam behind the news, Mr. Akume commended the Judicial Council for the swift action to sanction those allegedly cited for corruption.
I'm not surprised. I am privy to the fact that the corruption is not a perception in the judiciary, but it's real.
But how bad is it in the judiciary? Someone will say, are the judges that corrupt?
Well, I must avoid putting a kind of blanket description on the judiciary. There are very, very hardworking judges in the system. from the Supreme Court down to the Magistrate Court. But it's just unfortunate that there's very few of them have tainted the image of the judiciary by their involvement in this untoward act, which has brought this kind of furor.
The CJ has sharply responded to these issues by instituting a committee to look into it. But for now, we hear some 22 court judges have been suspended.
I think they're stepping in the right direction, because I remember that the Chief Justice was talking about evidence at the time that we raised the issue. Now she's got the evidence, a hard one for that matter. So she's got no other alternative than to get to action and to make sure that once investigations are done, I think our end of the world, where we are practicing democracy, we think that the other party must be heard. There must be an investigation. The opportunity must be given to the other party to take his side of the story. So at the end of the day, when evidence is put together to establish the guilt of those who are involved, then the Chief Justice will know which way to go, either punish or to get them off the hook.
But then we are also talking about the other officials who were cited in the scandal. Is it a huge exercise, the CJ, to probe all these alleged culprits in analysis footage?
I will say that once the CJ has started action, it means she wants to take the bull by the horn. We just have to give her the time, the space for her to do what she wants to do.
Contributing to the discussion, another legal practitioner, Abraham Amaleba, said he and some colleagues had earlier petitioned the Chief Justice about corruption in the judiciary. He said the latest expose indeed underscores the need to clean up the massive corruption in the country's judiciary.
For me, it's a case of deja vu, not indication. Deja vu in the sense that this has been something that we have always known. And so it is not new to us. It doesn't tickle me. I'm not surprised. Just that I am disappointed that in 2011, when we raised the issue, we were vilified, we were castigated. So if we had taken this issue seriously in 2011, I'm sure we would have nipped in the bud this issue that has cropped up.
How bad could this problem be?
It is as bad as having 22 judges being suspended or dismissed. It is as bad as having high-profile judges who are known in this country to be dispensing justice being caught in the web. It's as bad as we describe it as a scandal. It gives Ghana a very bad name. I think that as a nation, we should be concerned.
Looking at what is happening, the CJ has sharply responded to it by instituting a committee to look into. Do you endorse the steps being taken by the CJ?
Yes, I have always commended the Chief Justice. What is happening is a byproduct of our own society. And so we shouldn't think that what we are seeing now is as a result of anything, but it's as a result of our own conduct as a people.
Abraham Amaleba is a legal practitioner.
A legal practitioner, Asa Nkuma, says corruption in the judiciary is a reflection of society. He said the expose by Anas Arimeyao Anas will lead to a conversation on how to deal with corruption in the judiciary and other sectors. Mr. Nkuma said the fact that some judges took bribes does not mean the whole judiciary is corrupt. He said some judges on the tape refused to take the bribes and even threatened to prosecute litigants who tried to bribe them.
What has happened is that for that section of the society, we have been able to find evidence which supports or gives teeth to the perception that there is corruption in the country. So the corruption in the judiciary is a direct reflection of the corruption in the country. We are sinking from corruption. And one can only be grateful for this expose, because it hopefully will lead to a conversation on how to deal with this and deal with this once and for all.
Well, in bribery, it's often said the one who gives and the one who takes are all guilty. Should the focus be on the judges alone?
Well, in this instance, I think that when we watch the films, we will find out that it was the investigators who went out and bribed the judges. And that is why, as you might know, The state had to give them an immunity for them to be able to do their work. And so there is indeed a letter from the Attorney General a couple of days back granting immunity to them for what they did. But for the societal good, it is permissible for people to be approached under these circumstances. And if offenses occur, we know that these are people who were minded to collect those monies in the first place.
Most of the alleged by taking okay that the lower courts as opposed to the few that took place at the superior courts. What does it say about the justice delivery system in the country?
It's not a few. There were 12 high court judges. 12 out of 100 and something is more than 10% of our high court judges. In every survey, 10% is a high percentage. In fact, one can draw conclusions on the basis of 10%. So So if out of 108 or so judges, 12, you know, accepted money, it gives you an impression that there's a problem. But I'm sure that when enough comes out, we'll hear that there are other judges who refuse to take money. They were approached, they refused and threatened to jail people. And so it reflects the balance in society.
Legal practitioner A. Sankuma talking to Agatha Samoa.
This news comes to you from Radio Ghana Accra, and now the major stories. Judicial Council suspends 22 judges implicated in corruption scandal in undercover investigations by ace journalist Anas Aremeyawanas. Filing of nominations for presidential and parliamentary primaries in NDC ends today. President Mahama says refugee crisis in Europe is a wake-up call for world leaders to address challenges. And Nigerian Army releases 128 Boko Haram suspects. Please stay tuned.
Welcome back. NDC will close the filing of nominations for presidential and parliamentary elections today. President Mahama remains the only candidate to assault to contest the party's presidential primaries. Notable among those who have already filed to contest the parliamentary primaries are Foreign Minister Hannah Tete, Majority Leader Orban Bagbin, MP for Ningo Pram-Pram, E.T. Mensah, and MP for Zebila Cletus Avoka. Others billed to file today include Sports Minister Mustafa Ahmed and Deputy Minister for Local Government and Rural Development and MP for Ododo Diodio, Nilante Van Der Poy. The party opened nominations on August 27 for both presidential and parliamentary primaries. Parliamentary candidates are to file their nomination at a fee of 10,000 Ghana cedis, while presidential candidates pay 50,000 Ghana cedis. Female candidates and the physically challenged were provided a 50% rebate on the filing fees.
President John Dramani Mahama has opened the 15th International Forum on Africa in Berlin, Germany. The forum is premised on Africa's Agenda 2063, adopted by the African Union. President Mahama said development in the world, especially the refugee crisis which has hit Europe, must be a wake-up call for world leaders to chart a new course to address the problem. President Mahama congratulated Germany on accepting to host some of the world's refugees, most of whom are from Africa and the Middle East.
The recent Chancellor Kohl's statement about the prelude to those historical events that took place in Europe during the 1980s and 90s came to mind and stayed in my mind, is that I believe that these, again, are fateful days, weeks, and months. I believe that the trust, cooperation, and basic humanity of our world leaders now will chart a new and defining course in this crisis. So it is important as we discuss how to implement a post-2015 agenda to also investigate why we find ourselves here in the midst of this crisis in 2015. Because what is worth sustaining more than life itself? And for what are we developing our nations, if not the stability, prosperity, and dignity of our citizens' lives, and the fulfillment of our children's hopes, dreams, and ambitions?
President Mahama.
MPP's 2016 presidential candidate Nana Akufo-Addo has assured the party apparatus that in spite of wrangling, he remains focused on the task of ensuring an NPP victory in the general election. Nana Addo says he will not be distracted but will do well to mobilize Ghanaians for victory. Rounding off his three-day Arise and Build tour in the eastern region, Nana Addo assured party faithful in Kufodia that he is on top of issues.
The national executive over 3 weeks ago met in Accra and set up a five-man committee of high-ranking, competent, capable members of our party to look into the matter and make a report back to the national executive. I'm surprised that the matter is not being played out in the public space. We're using the structures of the party to deal with the problems of the party. That's what we have to do. So I'm asking everybody, let's respect it. Even senior members of the party like the redoubtable Kennedy at the poll. I'm pleading with him. Let us stop the internal bickering about the NPP and let us get on with forming our. I want to assure you, the man there, I am remaining focused on the main goal, which is to win the election of 2016. I'm not going to allow myself to be distracted. I was elected to do one thing, to mobilize the people of this country for an electoral victory for the MPP in 2016. I remain focused on that as my main consideration.
MPP's 2016 presidential candidate, Nana Addo.
The Institute of Statistical, Social and Economic Research, ISE, is projecting a slowdown in economic growth for the year despite slight improvements. This comes on the back of infrastructural deficit, declining commodity prices and persistent energy crisis. The economy is, however, likely to pick up in 2016 if sustained measures are put in place to bridge the yawning infrastructural gap and also the energy crisis. Launching the 2014 state of the Ghanaian Economy Report in Accra, the director of ISE, Professor Felix Asante, said macroeconomic management also remains a challenge. Here's a report by Mercy Dakum. The 2014 State of the Ghanaian Economy Report by the Institute of Statistical, Social and Economic Research, ISE, focused mainly on the country's infrastructural deficit. The report indicates that Ghana's infrastructural challenge remains a daunting one, which has been compounded by the energy crisis. It said Ghana needs to seriously prioritize its public finances and channel more resources to long-term projects. The director of ISE, Professor Felix Asante, said more needs to be done by way of development projects backed by strong investments in the oil and gas sector. He said favorable commodity prices can propel sustainable economic growth into the future.
In the long term, the key to successful raising enough investment for essential infrastructure rests on finding the optimum balance between public and private funds. More resources is needed for the fast sector, and money alone cannot answer this. We need prudent policies, wise management, and sound maintenance can make resources go much further and contribute significantly to narrowing the infrastructure gap.
Touching on the fiscal side, Professor Asante said over the years, Ghana has not been able to sustain the high GDP growth rate of 14% seen in 2011. He said for the first time since the last half decade, the country's growth rate in 2014 of 4.2% fell below the sub-Saharan African average of 5%. Thus, he noted it's an issue of concern. He attributed this, however, to the energy crisis, depreciation of the cedi, and the fall in commodity prices.
It is not likely that the country's fiscal situation will improve in 2015 and into 2016. The energy challenges do not seem to be going away soon, and that the private sector is unlikely to generate the necessary expansion to propel growth and employment creation. Now, the external sector. The continuous fall in commodity prices on the international market, especially for gold and crude oil, will continue to pose risks to Ghana's economic recovery agenda. The cedi's flow trades weakly against its major trading currency as demand continues to outweigh supply sources. Declining oil and commodity prices and the large trade and fiscal deficit will continue to drive exchange rate depreciation in Ghana. The exchange rate will continue to depreciate, but the extent to which this will happen depends on how government carries out the reforms and programs agreed with IMF. The largest deficit from 2013 to 2014 may make the achievement of the 3.5% target in the medium term difficult. Given by the events of previous years, the coming election may derail efforts to keep government expenditure on check. Even though government has promised us that they are not going to overspend. But if I look at historical data, I need to be convinced. And the question is, will the current IMF program halt the potential fiscal slippage that is likely to occur in 2015 and beyond? This is a question that we all need to find an answer to.
The chairman for the occasion and CEO of MTN, Ebenezer Bwaji, said the time has come for managers of the economy to learn from past experiences and change the narratives. On sectoral performance, the services sector continued to take the lead, followed by industrial and agricultural sectors. The report indicates that the services sector will be the driver of growth this year and beyond. Mercy Dakon reporting.
40 journalists have been trained in oil and gas reporting in Accra. The move is to broaden their knowledge on the sector. The journalists were taken through the oil and gas value chain, including production, exploration, storage and selling. Here's a report by Peggy Amofasua.
The training organized by GNA and sponsored by Cosmos Energy is to deepen the understanding of journalists to report accurately on the subject matter. The country manager of Cosmos Energy, Joe Mensah, said the collaboration is critical to building the capacity of journalists in the country. He said with the requisite knowledge and skills, the journalists will better inform the public on activities of oil and gas companies and the industry as a whole.
Journalism comes strong forth. It's very important for us to make the investment to make sure that when you're reporting about an industry and you have knowledge of an industry, chances are what you do has basis, ethical behavior, and transparency. That's what we're trying to promote. So it's something that started and we are building it to will have work and sustain it over a period of time.
Mr. Mensah challenged the journalists to take keen interest in continuous education to broaden their knowledge to improve on their reportage.
Education is something that doesn't end. We have to keep, you know, educating ourselves, and it helps all of us, because if they are well educated in the industry they're reporting to, chances are they do the right reporting, and because of what they do has so much impact on society, we want to make sure that the right investment is being made.
The chief executive officer of GNA, Bernard Otterville, was hopeful that the training will go a long way to help the participants report on oil and gas industry from an informed position.
Peggy Amofasua reporting.
Ghanaians joined the global community today to mark World Suicide Prevention Day. The WHO reiterates the need for all to reach out to those at risk of suicide. It says, and approximately 800,000 people die each year through suicide across the world. Rebecca Ikpe has more.
The real figure, according to WHO, of those who commit suicide is likely to be higher. This is largely because of the stigma associated with suicide, the lack of reliable death recording procedures, and religious as well as legal sanctions against suicide in some countries. WHO describes each suicide as a tragic loss of life and says it is difficult to imagine the extreme psychological pain that leads a person to decide that suicide is the only cause of action. Reaching out, therefore, to someone who is struggling can make a difference. Hence the theme for this year's World Prevention Suicide Day is Preventing Suicide, Reaching Out and Saving Lives. The International Association for Suicide Prevention and the WHO have begun an initiative calling individuals and organizations to prevent suicide by offering support to likely victims. The act of showing care and concern to someone who may be vulnerable to suicide can be a game changer. Clinical psychologists say isolation increases the risk of suicide, and having strong social connections can prevent it, and therefore being there for someone who has been disconnected can be life-saving. Dr. Joseph Osafo is a clinical psychologist and a suicidologist.
We just want to reduce the level of, if you like, stigma. Because when somebody attempts suicide, what happens to them? Nobody wants anything to do with a person. The best time to help someone who is going through suicide crisis is the person who has attempted. We call on everyone to go out there and provide support for anybody who they may find in crisis. Somebody who openly tells you, I want to die. It is a good time for you to get closer to the person and say, what is your problem? Maybe I can be of help. And one interesting thing in suicidology is that anybody can be suicide preventer. Anybody. You don't need to be a specialist. All you need is to be able to inspire hope.
On this World Suicide Prevention Day, WHO is asking all to commit to a proactive support to combat suicide by being sympathetic and offer a non-judgmental ear to persons in distress. Also, light a candle near a window at 8 p.m. today as a show of support for suicide prevention.
Rebecca Ekpe. Meanwhile, failed romantic relationships have been identified as a lead factor to suicide behavior in women in Ghana, while in men, it is the fear of shame. Clinical psychologist Dr. Joseph Osafo, in explaining the circumstances to Radio Ghana's Rebecca Ekpe, said most people tend to commit suicide in an attempt to escape pains relating to a difficult situation in life.
This whole area of suicidology or of psychological, which is suicidology, brings you closer to preventing people from taking their lives. And it's very interesting to see people, quote unquote, saved.
Every now and then we hear this happening. Mm. Why would one want to take his life?
And that is a enigma. It's an enigmatic behavior, an enigmatic issue. People often ask the question, why would people want to die? Somebody once said jovially, O'Brien, life is sweet, so why would you want to die? The reason cannot be pinned down to one single factor. Various reasons.
Such
for example, in Ghana, for men, one major risk factor is shame, the fear that they will be ashamed of a particular behavior. For women, it's more of some failed romantic relationship. For children that we have been to see, especially adolescents, it's more of school stress, disappointment that they didn't do well in school, and they didn't get their desired program that they wanted to go in for and invest in. There are others too who feel depressed over certain issues and challenges in life. And also there are people, adolescents and children, who are forced into marriage, and those who have been mislabeled as, let's say, witches, wizards, and cobra offense, witches, women. There are others who feel burdened by a particular problem, or they may feel people have abandoned them, loneliness, and feeling nobody cares.
My concern is that we don't normally talk about some of these issues. Culturally, we don't talk about them. I believe you share the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Your work must be challenging.
Very
how do you navigate through these issues?
One of them is what we're doing now. We get them people who we consider as stakeholders in society, the media, professional groups like psychologists, lawyers, judges, police. We study and we still engage in all these people to demystify, as it were, and talk about suicide. One major fable in suicidology is that when you talk about suicide, people are likely to kill themselves. That's actually a myth. It's not true. Science tells us that when you talk about suicide, or when somebody tells you, I want to die, he's giving the best signal that he's anxious for you to respond. So one way of navigating and dealing with this phenomenon of science and not wanting to talk about suicide is to engage civil society, engage stakeholders, let them know why it's important.
So what do you expect of society?
I'm expecting important stakeholders like the media to understand and to know what suicide is about and to be a part of the general attempt to educate the public on suicidal behavior.
Senior lecturer at Psychology Department, University of Ghana, Dr. Joseph Osafu, in that interview with Rebecca Ekpe. In foreign news, Nigeria's army says it has released 128 detainees held on suspicion of being Boko Haram militants 2 months after nearly 200 others were freed after security screening. A batch of 182 detainees were released early July, and another 128 more, including 109 men, 7 women and 12 boys, were handed over to Borno State Governor Kashim Shittim in Maiduguri. And now to end the news, the main points again. The Judicial Council has suspended 22 judges implicated in the corruption scandal in undercover investigations by ace journalist Anas Aremiyau Anas. More than 100 staff of the Judicial Service, including judges and magistrates, are being investigated. NDC's filing of nominations for presidential and parliamentary primaries ends today. President Mahama remains the only candidate who has filed to contest the party's presidential primaries. Among those billed to file today to contest the parliamentary primaries are Sports Minister Mustafa Ahmed and Deputy Minister of Local Government and Rural Development and MP for Dododo Nilante Vanderpoel. The news was presented.